You're watching Stockwatch with me, Juliette Tlevy, and joining me this Monday evening are Nick Krell from Ashburton Investments and Rikus Riordis from PSG Wealth Sandton. If you'd like to send us questions at the start of this new week, please do SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rikus, Nick, nice to see you both this evening.
Hello.
Nick, it was a slightly negative finish on the JSE today, and one got the feeling that not much happened out there. But there does seem to be a little bit of a reversal out of trades that have dominated over the last couple of weeks. In other words, gold shares got sold off, and some more so-called riskier assets, got bought into.
Mm.
Is there a slightly more optimistic mood on global markets in that case?
So I think there has been a significant shift, actually, in at least momentum, really probably stretching over the last two and a half weeks, where... I think we can take this sort of proxy here by looking at SA Inc. shares. And over the last 2.5 weeks, they've recovered significantly. You're talking, 15% up almost on the banks. So there has been a sort of trend reversal. I think a lot of that comes with a little bit more of a positive outlook on trade wars specifically, and or the looming US recession, or lack thereof. And so in both of those sort of circumstances, yes, sentiment is sort of changing and has moved fairly quickly. However, the reality, if you have a look at the facts on the ground, I think this is temporary in terms of risk.
Yeah, a temporary lull in hostilities or just no tweets from Donald Trump at the moment.
That helps a lot, I must say. But as Nick said, in other words, I think the rally we've seen in the financial sector, some of the retailers, some of the more fixed investment type of things like Reunert and whatever, I think that's really on the back of what's happening overseas rather than what's happening in this country, because nothing much has changed on the ground as far as your consumer spend is concerned, whether or capital spend from that kind of company. So I treat this rally with the utmost of care.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, I suppose, if you consider AVI's results. And actually, that was quite interesting to see the market reaction to the AVI numbers that came out today, which I think in the context of AVI over the last 15 years have probably been the worst, I guess, that they've reported, or just kind of the weakest growth by a long margin. I mean, this is a company that through thick and thin has managed to kind of grow profits and revenues.
Yeah.
And you saw a reversal in both, although they managed to generate cash. And yet the shares were up 3%.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that comes down to sentiments, all right? So the first half for AVI was the significant disappointment. Second half has been better, but not massively so. But really, I think a lot of the pain was felt, let's say, 5 months ago, primarily. And right now, most positions and people's positioning is one of being scared of results. When results come out, even if your expectation was low, it could well be worse. And if it is, it's going to be a very red day for you.
Yeah.
And so running into these sort of results, I think they were almost as expected. Outlook, which is not too dissimilar for where one's outlook should be in South Africa at the moment, and that is that it's quite muted looking forward.
Or possibly negative.
Yeah, possibly negative. But I think, they're sort of guiding towards, at least becoming, a profit increase on the following year. And looking through the businesses and performance, I think they've done a very credible job of managing these very sort of tough times.
Yeah.
So quite happy with the results, and that's why I think you start seeing, that share up, almost 3.5% in the day.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, it just reaffirms the position that you should have had beforehand, which was, this management team is a good caretaker of these assets. And yes, they're going to be linked into GDP, but they will do a credible job of managing through these tough times.
I mean, Rick, is the share then... In other words, it was cheap enough to warrant... I'm not entirely sure what my question is yet, because the AVI multiple that AVI trades on is still in sort of double digits, isn't it? Isn't it between 13 and 15 times?
It's a sort of a reflection of management. But as you said, I think it's the first time I've seen both volumes and margin declining, and this is from a really good management team. So I think if we didn't have the sort of boost in sentiment from overseas, it wouldn't have gone up 3% today. I think that really is the only reason, because on the face of it, As good as they tried, I mean, they're not going to get out of a turnover increase or margins. So it's cost cutting again, and how far can you go with that?
And hedging. And they're canny hedges. They don't seem to have been bitten in the same way that Pioneer Foods has in the past.
For example. Incredible. But I think really there's, you know, it's a bit on the tailwind of just a little bit risk on from overseas.
In other words, you wouldn't be buying AVI. So it's kind of what I'm reading into you.
Well, in that sector, it's probably the better one to have if you want to have it. Whether I'm going to buy it, while it's still obviously in a downtrend, it's not the kind of thing that I would go and put money in. If I've got it, you know, and if you're prepared to wait through this really bad patch, and hopefully it will come to an end sooner rather than later, it's probably the type of thing you want to have. But if you're looking to place new money, I don't think I would really go and pile into that at the moment.
Nick, would you? I mean, because it sounds as if you hold AVI, that you would be happy.
So do hold AVI and, yep, like it at these sort of valuation levels. Okay. I think it actually factors in a lot of the downside and at least is realistically priced for the economic environment we find ourselves in. You know, as Rick says, it's the quality operation within the food producer sort of sector. And ultimately, you know, would I be significantly overweight at the moment? No. Would it be in my portfolio? Yes, certainly.
Okay. One of the global factors today was a strengthening in the pound. And there is a question asking, given the current volatility around trade wars and Brexit, the pound getting stronger, am I correct in buying Quilter PLC as a potential Rand hedge? And it did seem as if some of the property stocks in the UK had quite a decent day. I think Intu had a cracker. Yeah. Would you buy Quilter, not just as a Rand hedge, but on its own merits?
Well, I think if you look through that, I mean, so the property count is having a bit of a turnaround specifically Intu. I think that's just in the news that arguably someone's coming and sniffing to do a bit of a buyout on that sort of basis. So from trading at a hefty discount to something a little bit more sort of palatable, sort of makes sense on that basis. I think if we just actually strip out and answer the question first by having a look at the pound, making investment decisions right now, because you've had a couple of days of strengthening of the pound, it really is because, you know, the probabilities have increased that you're going to a general election in the UK, and that hard Brexit has probably been averted. Now, the reality here is we still don't know what the outcome is going to be, and therefore making longer-term investment choices just because of a couple of days, it's still almost as murky as what it was a couple of days ago. I certainly wouldn't be jumping in now.
Because how do you feel about any kind of UK, PLC sort of company?
I think just with Quilter, I think they are great asset managers, but they are hostage to their environment. And as Nick said, who knows what's going to happen there? And I think that goes for a lot of UK stocks. If you're brave and fortune favors you, then obviously things like, you know, the property companies can have a huge turnaround if things work out better or not as bad as expected. But with the whole global universe out there, do you really want to go and bet on that? Because that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Just on Old Mutual, which of course, from which Quilter was spun, I think we are all watching the proceedings somewhat aghast. So Peter Moyo winning his recent court case, but arriving at work today and being prevented from going to work. I've used the word farcical many, many times. As a shareholder, do you just actually say, I'm not going near this thing until the board sorts it out? Or do you think this is kind of an entertaining sideshow and the business is going to carry on doing what it's doing? You could see that in the results, so therefore I'm going to buy the company because I think it's cheap. I don't know, where do you stand?
So I'm not sure entertaining is the word I'd use.
Yes, but, unedifying.
But it is not what you want to see happening. It is not good for shareholders. It's not good for the company. I do think that the discount you've seen in the share price is probably unjustified relative to the sort of ruckus that happens. But what you have in this sort of environment is two hostile, let's call them factions, that are publicly going to war with each other, and ultimately you don't know what's going to be uncovered, and you don't know how negative it's going to be and how long it's going to drag on for. So I think on a longer term basis, you look at the company itself and you say, you know what, it's now, let's call it almost 20% cheaper than it was before the news really broke. And I think if you look into the longer term, yeah, it offers value at these sort of levels. The reality is it can go down significantly further depending on the turmoil and how it actually unravels. So one must have the appetite to just roll with the punches if should that actually happen. So short term, yeah, it's almost uninvestable, but longer term, yeah, it's offering value.
I mean, Rikus, I suppose you know, your argument might be, I'm supposing here, is that you have a universe of stocks to invest in. So why on earth would you commit capital to a company that actually can't get it together between a board and its CEO to sort out this impasse?
And I agree with you to a certain extent. So right now, as Nick said, you know, who knows what's going to happen? But taking a bit of a longer term view, you have to ask yourself, or you actually said it, you know, Old Mutual doing what it does and carrying on in future. I think it's with any company. You can have a company that's got great operations that have a hiccup, whether it be a bad sales, you know, year because they got their product mix wrong, or there's an investigation of some sort that puts it into a negative sentiment territory. But looking along, you say, well, these guys, you know, this happens to any kind of company, and 2-3 years out from now, nobody's going to think about this specific tabloid news that's going on at the moment. So
it almost makes one question why executives should be paid such vast amounts of money, but that's a separate topic for discussion, I think.
So in that sense, Old Mutual is something I would keep my eye on because of that discount. And okay, if this gets settled, it doesn't matter how horribly it gets settled, but if it gets settled, becomes something of the past, and Old Mutual keeps on doing what Old Mutual does, then obviously it is at a discount, and I'd be really, really interested.
Okay. There's a question you mentioned. We were talking about the property stocks, specifically the UK property shares, and into maybe they're being approached from a private equity company. And the question is on Growthpoint. It says, it looks really good at current prices, and I don't have any property in my portfolio, but I retire in 5 years, and my portfolio is my pension fund. So what do the panel think of swapping my 5% in Coronation into Growthpoint? So bearing in mind that you will need income down the line.
Yeah,
and you have had good income out of Coronation, haven't you?
Yeah.
You have, and it's arguably getting better and better as this share price gets decimated. I like the property sector, and I think there's a lot of value, specifically over the long term, specifically when you have a look at the dividend and the income that you'll be able to generate out of that sort of portfolio. So I think if one does have an income need, certainly makes sense to have some sort of property. With no property exposure, I would definitely be taking advantage, and I think Growthpoint is the strong, largest blue chip sort of property company that's there. Not perfect, but from a valuation perspective, definitely offering a bit of value at these sort of levels. So, yeah, I would certainly be a fan.
Rikus, would you? I mean, you know, having said that, there's lots of to let signs everywhere, and a lot of them belong to Growthpoint too. If you look at some of the nodes in Johannesburg, like Rosebank.
That's the tail of the portfolio.
You do have the V&A Waterfront, which is, of course, an unbelievable property investment.
Yeah. I think, you know, it sort of goes back to the previous question on Old Mutual, strangely enough. In other words, is what's happening systematic to the company? In other words, is it something that affects the way the company makes money? Or is it just a glitch, you know, a horrible tabloid glitch, and it will look okay going forward? I am concerned that Growthpoint and your sort of more retail-focused property groups, as with the retailers themselves, as with banks, are sitting with a systemic problem where they're not lending out money to people that actually go and buy products, which gets deposited back into a bank, and the bank makes the money out of lending, and the retailer makes the money out of selling. In other words, there's a whole systemic change in the way both banks, retailers, and property stocks maybe are making their money, and that concerns me. So how does Growthpoint get rid of its assets? It's very difficult to do that. Coronation can sell something if it goes wrong and go and buy something else. It's easy for them to change their investments. So I'm some a little bit more comfortable with Coronation than going into one specific property stock.
Okay, well, that's a real conundrum. Got to make up your mind, unfortunately. We'll leave it there. If you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the start of this trading week. Were rather negative. The S&P down 0.2%, the Nasdaq off 0.5%, and the Dow Jones flat, essentially. And across the Atlantic, you've had the FTSE 100 pulling back 0.2%, the CAC 40 down 0.25%. The DAX, however, bucking the trend up 0.25%. We didn't have a particularly enthralling finish to the day, closing about 0.1% weaker. And still with me in studio are Nick Krell from Ashburton Investments and Rikus Riedis from PSG Wealth Santon. I feel that I have to mention now at this point the JP Morgan Chase index that has been launched. So the FT had this great story. It's called the Volfefe Index. It's after Donald Trump's Kofefe, baffling Kofefe tweets of 2017, in which no one knew what he was talking about. But these strategists at JP Morgan Chase have decided to see whether or not Donald Trump's tweets really do move the bond market. And in other words, if even though it might be good for your mental health to stay off Twitter, maybe you shouldn't if you're a bond investor. And unfortunately, the answer is you can't ignore him. Just going back to the start of the evening show, we were saying that there's a bit of a lull in hostilities at the moment. So are the two of you feeling slightly nervous at what may yet transpire? And is that kind of reflected in markets just treading water at the moment?
Well, you're just at the American markets. And I know when I left, sort of futures were pointing to about 0.33% up and now it's down. And my first thought was, has he tweeted again? You know, what has caused the sudden reversal? So, yeah. It unfortunately does.
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate state of affairs. But one does need to stay very close to your Twitter feed and how things are actually going, specifically in relation to Donald Trump. So is it dull? No. Is it a dull day when he doesn't tweet? No, it's a good day when he doesn't tweet, albeit that it does end up being slightly duller.
Is it quite baffling, though, for an ordinary retail investor to feel that they have to take this into account? Or do they have to take this into account when making investment decisions? Or do you think it is actually that we focus too much on it, that it is short-term noise? And yes, if you're a bond trader, you need to pay attention to short-term noise. But if you're a longer-term investor, you should really just ignore all of this and
From a longer-term perspective, no, I think largely one can ignore it. Not completely, but one does need to read the tweets to sort of see the way the world is, you know, in which way the world is moving. Largely what we have, and I think what moves markets at the moment, is nothing but noise. And really, on a long-term basis, it presents you with opportunities opposed to, you know, day trading and trying to get in at 8 and out at 11. Then the only thing you care about really is Twitter, less the fundamentals.
Mm. No. Any sage words to add there, Rikus?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can say, this is not going to go on forever. What's going to come once Trump isn't there anymore? Is it going to be better or worse? Obviously, we don't know. But we also know that all this rhetoric has had a very substantial effect on global growth. Because of trade wars, so in a sense, one has to be aware in order to see where the wind is blowing. Because if there's any kind of turnaround or slacking down from Trump, if he blinks, that sentiment, which is extremely negative as far as global growth is concerned, can turn around very quickly. And never mind what's going on in this country, which affects local shares. We've seen how global sentiment can actually push our own shares. And for your retail investor, that is important because that really means whether you're buying something at a price earnings of 8 or a price earnings of 12.
Yeah. The question is, when Prosus lists on Wednesday, is it Wednesday or Thursday, will the share price of Naspers decrease? If so, by how much?
Yeah, so in simple terms, theoretically, because we don't actually have the numbers at the moment, but the Naspers share price should go down by 0.25%. And that should be made up roughly of process. So, you know, that's the back of the matchbox calculation. Ultimately, you need to see how many investors take up their allocation in Naspers shares, opposed to Prosus, and you'll be able to sort of get all that data over the next, I think it all comes through on what, the 16th, 11th, it sort of lists. Either way, you know, very imminently you're going to get the actual numbers, but yeah, back of the matchbox, that's it.
Are you concerned about the volume effect on the JSE? Are you concerned that we are going to see a noticeable decline in volumes, and therefore the JSE is something that you would not be going near at this point?
I would assume the JSE itself is concerned.
Yeah, I mean the JSE Limited. Yeah.
Yeah. I think by its very nature, it will have an effect as some of the value departs to an offshore listing. So yeah.
We were talking about Growthpoint. There's a whole option as far as property stocks listed on the JSE are concerned. And the question is, please ask the panel their views on Equites. The CEO and director, I'm not sure which director, have been aggressively selling shares. Is this something to be wary of? ShopRite has also made comments saying that they project low forward returns for this industry and sold out of their logistics property. So they're going into sale and leaseback agreements. Mm-hmm. And Equites, I think, is said to be interested in buying some of their warehousing space. Mm-hmm. But firstly, on the question of a CEO aggressively selling shares, does that make you nervous when that happens?
Yes, quite simply. Does it mean anything? No, but does it require further investigation? Yes, yes, certainly it does. You know, I'm not sure I'm sort of morally in favor of the idea of watching the share price because the CEO and or directors are buying or selling. You know, we have seen certain times where I think the share price has artificially been almost propped up, at least trying to change the sentiment, trying to get manipulated, because you'll see the directors putting in a little bit of value. So it's not a metric I would like to really look at, but I think certainly one needs to investigate it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, is this something you're watching? And also, do you think ShopRite selling out of wanting to sell their properties, their warehouses, is a comment on the state of the sector, or rather just a comment on ShopRite trying to release cash? And actually, it's probably good for Equites.
Yeah, I think, I mean, ShopRite specifically said, well, this is not a profitable unit. It's not unlike Spar, I would imagine, which actually do run warehouses. This is not something we do. Rather give it to somebody who wants it. Whether Equities is making a good buy. They have been very acquisitive. So, yeah, directors selling into a market where the company itself have been raising quite a lot of money. It is something to be watched, I think. But the question is, everything that they are buying, is it going to make money 2 or 3 years down the track, and at what price are they buying it?
Yeah. Okay, well, something for us to investigate. There's a question just on mid-cap stocks generally, asking any stocks out there that look attractive or worth watching for a buy? Unfortunately, a lot of the JSE is now the mid-cap index because of what you've seen over the last few months. But I think small caps in particular are, Keith McLachlan was doing some research on it a couple of months ago, saying that, you know, they're at such a sort of a wide discount to their kind of historic levels, that, which suggested that maybe if you're brave, you should buy a few small cap shares. What about mid caps?
So mid caps, I think it works in a similar way. Because of your lack of liquidity, what happens is negative news can get exacerbated in the share price of your small and mid caps. And ultimately, it does mean on a longer-term basis that more value could be presented in those sort of sectors. Issue at the moment is that you need sentiment to change in order for that to happen. You need your economic environment to sort of change. And your small and mid-cap sectors obviously are a lot less diversified by the virtue of being significantly smaller, which means the risk is higher. And so if one thinks it is the bottom in SA and it's all upward from here, sure, I think there's lots of value, but it's a high risk sort of play.
And a call on the South African economy.
That, yeah, and I think,
largely.
I mean, obviously there are things in the mid-cap sector sitting with great balance sheet and great cash flow and a good dividend yield and a proven business model. And if you are prepared to wait and also prepared to suffer any drawdown because of negative sentiment, that's great. So there is opportunity, but it sort of depends on what shortish term loss you are prepared to take.
Yeah. Okay. So we haven't actually identified the mid-cap stocks, but as I say, a lot of the JSE is not a mid-cap, I guess. No. Getting to your stock picks this evening, Mr. Price is yours, Nick. So it's tough out there, as we saw with AVI's results, and it's tough for the apparel guys. Why would you buy Mr. Price?
So I think it's largely factoring in the current macro environment relative to the longer-term quality of these sort of stocks and then where it's currently trading. And ultimately, in my view, Mr. Price is at a significant discount relative to where it should be trading, even with the tough environment that sort of exists. In terms of its balance sheet, in terms of its sort of execution over a period of time, its sort of quality attributes, it should demand that it trades at a premium relative to the sector, and that I think has been decimated to a certain extent. And ultimately, I therefore see opportunity coming a begging. Unlike a lot of the SA Inc., which has re-rated significantly, probably just to fair value or slightly below fair value, something like Mr. Price, I still think has space to re-rate just to get back to sort of its intrinsic value.
Okay. You don't really shop on credit at Mr. Price, but do you like Visa? I suppose there are a few credit sales out there.
Well, you can certainly use that credit to go and shop at Mr. Price, and that's sort of, in this environment with all the noise and, can we go and buy value stocks or growth stocks, it just does what it does. And I think for the future, you've got a growing number of transactions, a growing number of clients actually using their services and a growing value of transactions done. So it sort of prints money. And in that sense, it's just a growth story that I think can continue. And in a certain sense, it's a safe play.
Yeah, prints money, ironically, in an increasingly cashless society. And we're talking about a very, very large cap stock indeed. But do you still think it's worth picking up?
Yeah, I think so.
Rikus, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Kroll is from Ashburton Investments. Rikus Redis is from PSG Wealth Santon. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow evening at 7:30. Have a good night. Getting to your stock picks this evening, Mr. Price is yours, Nick. So it's tough out there, as we saw with AVI's results, and it's tough for the apparel guys. Why would you buy Mr. Price?
So I think it's largely factoring in the current macro environment relative to the longer-term quality of these sort of stocks and then where it's currently trading. And ultimately, in my view, Mr. Price is at a significant discount relative to where it should be trading, even with the tough environment that sort of exists. In terms of its balance sheet, in terms of its sort of execution over a period of time, its sort of quality attributes, it should demand that it trades at a premium relative to the sector, and that I think has been decimated to a certain extent. And ultimately, I therefore see opportunity coming a begging. Unlike a lot of the SA Inc., which has re-rated significantly, probably just to fair value or slightly below fair value, something like Mr. Price, I still think has space to re-rate just to get back to sort of its intrinsic value.
Okay. You don't really shop on credit at Mr. Price, but do you like Visa? I suppose there are a few credit sales out there.
Well, you can certainly use that credit to go and shop at Mr. Price, and that's sort of, in this environment with all the noise and, can we go and buy value stocks or growth stocks, it just does what it does. And I think for the future, you've got a growing number of transactions, a growing number of clients actually using their services and a growing value of transactions done. So it sort of prints money. And in that sense, it's just a growth story that I think can continue. And in a certain sense, it's a safe play.
Yeah, prints money, ironically, in an increasingly cashless society. And we're talking about a very, very large cap stock indeed. But do you still think it's worth picking up?
Yeah, I think so.
Rikus, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Kroll is from Ashburton Investments. Rikus Redis is from PSG Wealth Santon. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow evening at 7:30. Have a good night.